KALW.
Camping's really starting to take off.
School's out, flights are canceled, and many of us are thinking about getting outside, if we can.
To deny that for a whole summer based on theoretical concerns about transmission, you know, I just don't see it.
How to camp safely and responsibly in the summer of COVID, then disrupting stereotypes about who is and who is not outdoorsy.
People tell me all the time, well, Black people don't have a relationship with wild spaces. But when I start talking about fishing, for instance, ears perk up and the stories unfold.
And we'll hear a reading from a local author who writes about a painful family history.
It's about what it means to inherit a history of genocide and process intergenerational trauma.
That's coming up. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Currently, California has set bail statewide at $0 for misdemeanors and low-level felonies. The idea, put into law 2 months ago, was to reduce the population in jails for fear they'd become hotbeds of infections. And even though some state prisons and jails have done just that, the bail order is set to end on June 20th. Today, state judicial leaders are considering ending it early. The California Judicial Council said the bail order kept 20,000 suspects out of jail while they await trial. But the president of the state's Police Chiefs Association praised the reconsideration, noting that chiefs feared the bail rule, quote, would result in inappropriate early release of potentially dangerous offenders, unquote. A number of law enforcement leaders publicized cases where suspects were released without bail and quickly arrested again. But statistics show that crime rates have not notably increased. Jonathan Underland is spokesman for the End Money Bail campaign. He said the zero bail order would end, quote, at a time when the racial and economic injustice of wealth-based incarceration is crystal clear, unquote. Voters will have the chance in November to consider a ballot measure that would decide whether to replace the current money bail system. Yesterday afternoon, BART officials released a statement saying that another of their employees had tested positive for the coronavirus. KALW's Joshua Sorodiak has more.
While this employee worked in stations and on BART trains, BART officials say that they did not have direct contact with the public. The last day the employee worked was Sunday, and they are currently in quarantine. Officials also say that the employee wore a mask and gloves during their shifts and adhered to social distancing guidelines. BART says that they are utilizing contact tracing and that all employees who came into contact with the infected worker have since been quarantined for testing. This was the first employee in a public-facing role to test positive for the virus. However, according to the statement, two other workers with positions behind the scenes contracted coronavirus in recent weeks. BART says both workers have since recovered. The BART system has been engaged in enhanced cleaning practices to disinfect train cars and stations. These include using a disinfectant fog on all in-use cars every 24 hours and wiping down all high-touch surfaces at least 6 times per janitorial shift. All stations are cleaned multiple times each day. BART has faced a drastic decrease in ridership due to the coronavirus, and as a result, trains are not running as frequently. Trains are now running every 30 minutes on weekdays, and service ends at 9 p.m. every night. Weekend service now begins at 8 a.m. I'm Joshua Sorodiak, KALW News.
The San Francisco mayor's office announced yesterday that they're issuing temporary outdoor dining permits to restaurants. KALW's Imran Ali Mullick tells us more.
It's called the Shared Spaces Program, allowing restaurants that have sit-down service to temporarily offer outdoor dining. Restaurant owners can now log on to sf.gov/sharedspaces to obtain a free, expedited permit that allows them to use sidewalks, parking lanes, and parks to accommodate restaurant goers. Mayor London Breed said that this program is intended to help small businesses, workers, and residents who are ready to safely sit outside and enjoy a meal. Restaurants and patrons will have to follow the existing guidelines as well as some new ones. For example, customers will be expected to wear masks until they're seated and then put them back on if they need to use the restroom. Tables must be limited to 6 customers unless they are members of a single household. Furniture must go back inside every night and there must be a 6-foot-wide travel path left for pedestrians. The city says that since social distancing requirements are expected to continue until there is a vaccine, the Shared Spaces program gives San Francisco a way to help its restaurant business. Starting Monday, retail businesses and storefronts can also apply to be a part of the Shared Spaces program. Permits that are approved will be valid until the end of December 2020. I'm Imran Ali Malik, KALW News.
Schools are letting out, summer's almost here, and COVID has canceled many people's vacation plans. So more Bay Areans might be turning to camping. But can we go? Is it safe? KALW's Marissa Ortega-Welch really wanted to find out.
There basically isn't anything I want to do more than go camping in the summertime. But since shelter-in-place started, I've been wondering if I'm going to be able to do that. Even if it's allowed, is it safe? And even if it's safe, is it the responsible thing to do? Responsible or not, people are going camping. I called Tom Purcell, general manager of Sports Basement in Berkeley. He says the camping store's sales are down overall because the store was closed for a couple months, but it's recently reopened and
camping's really starting to take off.
And he expects that to continue as shelter-in-place restrictions are lifted. Bicycle sales, by the way, are way up.
Bikes, as they say, are the new toilet paper.
He sees camping as a pretty good activity to do in the time of social distancing.
When people are in their own little unit and they're cooking for themselves and with their family and friends in a campsite, they probably feel pretty safe.
They might feel safe, but are they? I call Professor of Epidemiology at UC San Francisco, Dr. George Rutherford, to ask. He agrees, full stop.
Yes, there's no reason not to go camping. You know, let's say that you know it's a family of four, okay? And instead of being in the house or being in the car, they're in a tent. Big deal. What's the difference? It's fine. And now if you start bringing, you know, 45 unrelated people together and mix them together, that's another issue.
Rutherford says camp with your household. And if you camp with people outside your household, say it with me now, stay 6 feet apart, wear a mask, and don't go if you're sick.
Basically the same rules, the same kinds of advice that we give for everything else.
Oh, and also,
don't go to choir camp.
That is a real thing. I'm sure there is.
Of course it's a real thing. My kids went to choir camp. You know, singing's a risk factor.
Group singing aside, your family in your own little tent out in nature is safe. But what about when nature calls? It seems like bathrooms would be one of the most dangerous transmission points.
You know, the problem's not with the bathrooms. The problem is with having lots of people in the bathroom at the same time.
Coronavirus is mostly transmitted through breathing, sneezing, or coughing. So he says, yes, there's a possibility that someone directly sneezes on a surface that you then touch. Bring some wipes to clean off those surfaces first. Rutherford says getting out in nature is good for us, physically and mentally.
And to deny that for a whole summer based on theoretical concerns about transmission, you know, I just don't see it.
Are you going camping this summer?
Hell no.
He never goes camping.
My kids went camping 2 weeks ago.
Did you kind of weigh in with them and make sure they were going to do the right thing?
I said, call me when you get there. And, you know, wear a mask if you're around other people. You know, I don't want you to bring it back here and give it to me.
Okay, so it's relatively safe to go camping, but where can we go? A lot of campgrounds in state and national parks and forests have been closed for months.
Well, the great news is, yes, you can go camping in the national forests this summer.
This is Nancy Pierichini, Deputy Director for Public Services for the National Forests of California. She says campgrounds are starting to reopen on a case-by-case basis. It's best to check online if you're wondering about a particular place. And if you're planning on camping outside of a campground,
please be prepared to pack out your trash. And this might mean human waste if appropriate.
The other thing Pierichini says is trail etiquette. It's one thing to camp on your own, but if you want to hike, you may end up on a narrow trail where it will be harder to social distance. Hikers will have to take care to navigate safely around each other.
If there's a big patch of poison oak next to you and you think, huh, I don't want to have to step off the trail into that, then, you know, maybe find another location or backtrack, communicate it, but it just maybe requires a little bit more patience.
Currently, the message from the California Department of Public Health is to recreate close to home.
Nevertheless, you know, when people show up to camp, we're not in a position to ask where they came from.
I wondered if Perichini was concerned that COVID would send more people camping this summer, resulting in more trash or forest fires. But she says she welcomes experienced and new campers.
So I wouldn't say we're worried about it. We're just trying to let people know we're excited for people to come visit, but we're also happy and interested in helping them learn how to do it safely in a COVID-19 environment or not.
I'm still left with the question of, is traveling to camp this summer the responsible thing to do? Me with my city germs driving across the state, not to mention stopping to buy an ice cream sandwich along the way. Chris Lietze, the owner of the Mono Market in Levine in California, took a break from work to talk to me. His grocery store is right at the eastern entrance to Yosemite and gets visitors from the Bay Area, Reno, and LA. Visitors who could spread COVID to this town of about 200 people.
In a small town like this, the concern is having our medical facilities be overwhelmed.
Lietze says he's been getting visitors from places that have different health rules than Mono County, which requires you to wear a mask inside.
I have many signs out front. I have free masks out front, and people walk right by everything into my store as if it was situation normal. I have to play the mask police, which I have no desire to do.
Lietze got a small business loan, which has helped him make payroll. His biggest concern is his staff getting sick.
The store would have to shut down for 2 weeks to clean it out. That's what I would do, to quarantine all my employees and sanitize the place. So then the community would be without its community market for 2 weeks. And that's really my biggest fear.
Lietze says if you have a mask, he'll be happy to welcome you into his store, even if you traveled there all the way from the Bay Area.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really nice. It's nice to get out, and I get out almost every day and do something. So as long as you respect the rules of the county and the needs of my employees, then I encourage coming up to recreate.
Even if you're not normally a camper, the summer of COVID might be your time. Just please stay 6 feet away from me. In Oakland, I'm Marissa Ortega-Welch for Cross Currents.
Marissa is KALW's science reporter. You can email her at science@kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hannah Baba. Last month, an incident involving a white woman calling the cops on a black birder in New York's Central Park sparked a conversation about racism in the outdoors world. And it sparked a celebration online, Black Birders Week. On social media and through live online events, black birders highlighted both the prejudices and the joys they experience while birding. One of their messages? There are more of us than you think. More black birders and more people of color interested in the environment in general. And it's only increasing. The problem's really around representation. Back in 2014, KALW reporter Todd Whitney decided to take a closer look at this perception that black people aren't really into nature. We'll hear about it in this story from our archives.
Dad, there's a mountain of statistics that say black Americans don't go out in nature as much as other ethnicities. I mean, it's something that I can believe because I kind of live it and I fit into the statistic. I'm black and I kind of like nature, but I don't really mess with it in a traditional sense. And I know I'm not alone in that. I'm here in Joaquin Miller Park in Oakland, California with Rue Mapp, the founder and CEO of Outdoor Afro.
Outdoor Afro is an online and in-person social and nature network. And it's our goal to celebrate and inspire African American connections to nature.
I took a hike with Rue and other hikers on a Sunday morning, and I asked them about what they think of Black folks and nature not mingling much.
I think a lot of times, a lot of Black people, like for me, we're originally from Chicago, and we lived in a very concentrated area, cement city, really. So in the city, we just knew city life and city stuff, but we didn't know, like, outdoorsy stuff. But once you move away from the environment, then you can do outdoorsy stuff.
That's Kush Anderson. She and her son, Jermaine, traveled from Sacramento to participate in today's hike. Then there was Krishna Jude Moore. So I asked Jude Moore if he was familiar with any Black American contributions to the environmental movement.
It was a Black man who came up with peanut butter, and everybody I know who goes camping, I mean, you got to have peanut butter.
Moore's talking about George Washington Carver, and he's not just the inventor of peanut butter, but he's one of the most prominent agriculturalists and inventors of the 1800s. These contributions that we tend to forget about are what Rue Mapp thinks is part of a rich history of outdoor exploration and environmentalism that Black Americans have been part of. Our group leader, Rue Mapp, breaks it down for us.
Much of our history there, and so that one of the things that Outdoor Afro aims to do is to break open not only the natural history of a place, but the human history of a place. And in that way, we're able to help people feel a deeper sense of connection, purpose, as well as a sense of ownership. Like, this is mine. You know, these are where my people dwelt.
History is a big part of these walks for Rue Mapp. She told me about the Buffalo Soldiers. The Buffalo Soldiers, they were an all-Black military unit that later became some of America's first park rangers. But the Black tradition of outdoor contributions goes beyond the Buffalo Soldiers. There's also individuals like John Francis. He's a Black man who grew up in Marin County, and he walked across America to promote environmentalism back in the 70s. To learn more about some of these Black environmentalists, I met up with Carolyn Finney. She's the author of Black Faces, White Spaces. And she's a professor of environmental policy and management at UC Berkeley.
In terms of the majority culture, historically in the United States, setting a narrative and a tone about the environment and the way we should think about it and relate to it, we Black and brown folks have largely been left out of that mainstream conversation.
So Finney says being left out takes a couple different forms. One of those is representation in environmental and government organizations, where people of color represent somewhere between 12 and 16%, while we make up nearly 40% of the U.S. population. Then there's the media's representation of Black folks in nature. Dr. Finney looked into this. She picked up a decade's worth of issues of Outside Magazine. That's one of the most popular outdoor enthusiast magazines around. In it, of the 4,600 photos that had people in them, just over 100 featured Black Americans. And those are mostly famous male athletes. Doing my own little experiment, I checked out the latest edition of Outside Magazine.
Nah. Hey, there's a familiar face. There's a brother right there. There's one. Nah.
In the latest edition of Outside, out of the 87 photos that have people in them, only 8 feature Black Americans. But representation isn't just about jobs and the images in magazines. It's about the larger narrative we create about the environment and the outdoors. Black people do get outside, just not in the traditional ways that we tend to think about the outdoors. Some people get their outdoor activities by hitting a hiking trail, while others might just kick it over to Lake Merritt for a barbecue. It all doesn't have to look the same. Again, here's Rue Mapp from Outdoor Afro.
People tell me all the time, well, Black people don't have a relationship with wild spaces. But when I start talking about fishing, for instance, ears perk up and the stories unfold.
Some of those stories are part of a history when coming together in public spaces wasn't always safe for Black folks. And that legacy of not having safety in numbers has led to a particular way of thinking about nature. When the Outdoor Foundation surveyed Americans and asked why they don't take advantage of nature, more than a third of Black Americans said they're just not interested.
Nature has a PR problem. For generations, people have worked really hard on farms. The idea of going out and sleeping on the ground is not appealing. It doesn't signal progress to some people. I've actually have heard some people say, why are you going to play homeless?
Well, in my experience on the hike, with the birds, the smells, the views, the tranquility, it felt really good to be outdoors. I might even start to switch my walks around Lake Merritt in Oakland for more hikes in the hills. In Oakland, I'm Todd Whitney.
for Cross Currents.
The organization mentioned in the piece, Outdoor Afro, will accept applications to join its leadership team this month. Learn more at their website, which you could find at ours, klw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hana Baba. Bay Area authors have had to cancel launch parties and book tours due to the coronavirus, so KALW is bringing them to you in a series we're calling New Arrivals. Today we hear from Oakland author Monica Sook, reading from her book of poetry called A Nail the Evening Hangs On.
It's about my relationship to my family's experiences during the Khmer Rouge regime and what it means to inherit a history of genocide and process intergenerational trauma. This is one of my favorite poems. It's called The Weaver. She threaded the loom with one strand of her long silver hair, which might have kept growing until she was done, which might have fallen out, but I would come in and sit beside her on the cushion without her noticing, and she would continue. Every day I saw this old woman weaving at her loom, rivers and lakes underneath her hair, the bottom full of silt. I could see it if I reached with a comb, and that was when she'd look at me. Under her hair, she kept her oldest son, who was out for a morning swim, with swallows swooping down to touch the water. It made her happy as she worked on silk dresses, and her hair never ran out. Sometimes, when she was tired, she'd tie it up and let all the tired animals around her house drink from her head.
That was Monica Sook reading from her book, A Nail the Evening Hangs On. Find more information about that book and other recent releases by Bay Area authors at klw.org/newarrivals. While you're there, subscribe to our podcast and listen to Cross Currents wherever and whenever you want. Our team includes Hana Baba, Vivian Basu Skinner, Janae Darden, Imran Ali Mullick, Lisa Morehouse, and Joshua Sorodiak. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tarek Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shireen Adel. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Trefney.